Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th Canto, Chapter 2, Text Number 48, Chapter Maharaj Nini meets the 9th Yogendras. Grihitva Vindeyarathan Grihitva Vindeyarathan
Grihitva Vindeyarathan guidance. Therefore,
A disciple should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. Therefore, additional concern will now be given so that the conditioned soul who decides to go back home, back to Godhead, can properly identify the bona fide spiritual master. According to Srila Sridhara Swami and Srila Jiva Goswami, associating with a pure devotee of the Lord is so important that now that the various categories of devotional service have been defined, the additional verses are given concerning the qualification of a pure devotee so that students of Srimad Bhagavatam will make no mistake in this connection. Similarly, in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna about the symptoms of a completely Krishna conscious person. And Krishna elaborately explains the symptoms of one who is prajna pradishta or established in Krishna consciousness. The particular qualification mentioned in this verse is Vishnor Maya Udam Pashyan. One should see the entire material universe as a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. There is no question of lamenting or rejoicing, for that it is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Within this verse, one generally laments upon losing something desirable and rejoices upon acquiring the objects of his wish. But since a pure devotee has no personal desires, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Adayava Shanta, there is no question of pain or loss. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shoshati Na Kamshati Sama Sarvesha Bhudeshu Mad Bhakti Tapadevaram. One who is transcendently situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Similarly, Lord Shiva stated his wife Parvati by glorifying the character of King Chitraketu. Narayana Parasarve Na Sudarshana Vibhyati Sarga Abhavarga Narakeshya Vilyasa Darshina. Devotee is solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayana, never creates any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planet, liberation, and the hellish planet are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. This state of complete satisfaction in the devotional service of Krishna is not a mental concoction achieved by artificial meditation, but is a result of having experienced the superior nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a reservoir of transcendental bliss. And stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:59, when impersonalists and voidists artificially try to push material things out of their mind, they undergo great hardships and ordeals in their artificial meditation. Klesho adhikatara stesham avyakta avyakta sakta chetasham avyakta hi kridhir dukham dehavitri abhayate. According to Lord Krishna, it is only with great inconvenience and suffering that one can achieve impersonal liberation, because every living being is eternally a person, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord Krishna. The concept of giving up one's personal identity is a reaction to the terrible frustration of material egotism. It is not a costly program. If one is suffering unbearable pain in his hand, he may agree to have his hand amputated. But the real solution is to remove the infection so that the healthy hand may become a source of pleasure. Similarly, ego or the sense of that I am is a source of unlimited happiness when we understand that we are namely the servant of Krishna. Impersonal meditation is dry and troublesome. A pure devotee realizes that he is an eternal person, part and parcel of the Supreme Person Lord Krishna, and that has the privilege as a son of God to participate in the ecstatic eternal pastimes of the Supreme Lord, loving Krishna and playing with him forever. For such a devotee, the pale material nature, which is but a perverted reflection of the spiritual world, becomes totally unattractive. Therefore, one who is completely attached to Krishna and uninterested in the manifestation of Maya can be considered Bhagavata Uttama, a pure devotee of the Lord, as described in a previous verse, Bhakti Parecha Bhakti Parecha Go Virakti Anyatacha Srila Madhvacharya has stated Vishnu Maya, Vishnu Ichchadani. The word Vishnu Maya in this world indicates that the illusory energy always remains dependent upon the will of Lord Vishnu. Similarly, the Brahma Samhita 544 says, Srishti Sthiti Pralaya Sadhana Shakti Rekha Chaya Vajasya Bhuvanani Vibhasti Durga. Maya is like a shadow of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who serves him in the creation, maintenance and annihilation of this world. Just as a shadow has no independent power of movement but follows the substance that casts the shadow, the illusory energy of the Lord has no independent power but represents the living entity according to the Lord's desire. One of Krishna's opulence is that he is supremely detached. When a living entity wants to forget him, Krishna immediately employs his illusory energy to facilitate the foolishness of the conditioned soul. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the word Grihitva Pinindriya Arthan indicates that a pure devotee of the Lord does not see acting within the world. Rather, he uses his senses in the service of the Lord. Service of the Lord of the senses, Hrishikesha, Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchyate. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that if one gives up those material things which are favorable for serving Krishna, considering them material and therefore an impediment to his spiritual advancement, his renunciation is merely Falgu Vairagya or immature and imperfect renunciation. On the other hand, one who accepts all the material things of the service of Krishna without any personal desire for sense gratification is actually renounced. Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has warned in his commentary on this verse that by envying any of the three classes of devotees, Uttamadhikari, Madhyamadhikari or Kanishka Adhikari, one falls down to the platform of impersonalism and loses all power to benefit others or even himself. Therefore, those who are trying to advance in Krishna consciousness should not endanger their transcendental experience by unnecessarily criticizing other Vaishnavas. According to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if one engages in Falgu Vairagya or renouncing material things that are favorable in the service of the Lord Krishna, one runs the risk of being polluted by impersonal philosophy. On the other hand, by sticking to the principle of Yukta Vairagya, engaging everything for Krishna without personal desire, one can remain aloof from the danger of material sense gratification and gradually come to the Mahabhagavata platform as mentioned in this verse. Om Jnana Simranthasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Kritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadabhanyam Dadati Saputandikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Kadadhar Shri Vasavati Gaurav Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I beg for mercy for all the devotees so that I can speak something for my own purification and hope it will benefit others also. As mentioned in this purport, from this verse onwards, that is the verse number 48-55, here it is, this is the end of this chapter, that is the end of the second chapter, and this gives the characteristics of a pure devotee and Uttama Adhikari. So 48 verse is the first verse describing the characteristics of a pure devotee, Uttama Adhikari. So this verse actually comes after describing the characteristics of Madhyamadhikari as well as Kanishka Adhikari. So the previous verse was a description of the characteristics of a Kanishka Adhikari. And now it is going to the highest platform, that is the greatest of the devotees, that is Uttama Adhikari. Generally, devotees are classified according to different sets of parameters. In nectar devotion, this classification is given according to the faith and conviction of a devotee in the scriptures. and how this well we can present an argument with other devotees, not other devotees, you know, those who oppose this kind of philosophy, and how can they convince them. Whereas Sri Ishopanishad, this classification is presented according to the realization, just as here. Here we can see this symptom given here is the realization of an Uttama Adhikari. And according to the level of the chanting, the purity of the chanting, the devotees are classified in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we will see later how these classifications are presented. But at this current verse, the classification is based on the realization of devotees. So here we can see, even while engaging the senses in contact with the objects, that is, even the senses are engaged with the in activities of this material world, they are not affected, they are not related, nor they are depressed in any condition. So this is the realization why they are acting in this material world. However, if you see the first point, that is when the senses are in contact with their objects, we can see that this is a particular scenario everyone is going through. That is, all of us, all of our senses and mind is always in association with the sense objects. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, we can see in the 15th chapter, when that the banyan tree is described, that is, its roots are growing up and the trunk is going down, that is representing the material world, and the end of each branch is representing the senses, and the twigs are representing the sense objects. So the senses and the sense objects are intimately connected. So that is the basic principle that drives the whole material universe, that is the connection or the attachment of the senses with the sense objects, including the mind. And the materialistic people, they have strong faith in this. They have strong faith in this process, that by gratifying the senses and the mind, that is, by fulfilling the demands of their senses and mind, they can achieve peace, happiness and perfection of life. You know, everything will be alright. So this is the peace formula, basically. That is, gratify the senses, gratify the mind, then I'll be a peaceful person, I'll be a happy man, I'll have all kinds of prosperity. But it doesn't work like that. We can see, as Bhagavad Gita says, it is exactly the opposite. Bhagavad Gita says, in the second chapter, it says, you know, whenever the senses are in touch, when we try to satisfy the senses, when we try for sense gratification, the end result is only suffering. It is said, yehi samsarjita bhoga dukkha yonaya eshate adhyatmananda kauteya na teshu ramate buddha. That is, whenever the senses are trying to gratify by itself, by in touch with the sense object, the immediate reaction is that the end result is that there is misery. So the principle of Bhagavad Gita says, the sense gratification equates to suffering. There is no, you know, it's the direct consequence of sense gratification is suffering. But in the material world, people, they don't understand this basic point, because they are covered by the illusory energy of the Lord. And the pursuits are ultimately defeated. The pursuits for sense gratifications are ultimately defeated. It says, Mokhasho, Mokha Karmana, Mokha Jnana Vichetasa, Rakshasi Mashriya Chaiva, Bhagati Mohini Sita. Because of the deluded condition, all the effort for fruitive activities, the effort for liberation, the effort for cultivating real knowledge, everything is defeated completely. And we can see this point even from the people who are actually perfected, or those who are trying to perfect the art of sense gratification. Because there are people who have achieved a lot of money, they have achieved great position, they have achieved whatever material comforts they want. But even there, when we see their lives, we can see they haven't really achieved the happiness or satisfaction. It is like, you know, one of the great problems, or one of the big problems of a highly successful and a man who is very rich, is he is lonely. His relationships and whomever he talks, the whole thing is centered around money. Nobody really wants to have a true relation with him. Everything is centered around money. So that money is a material opulence creates a blockage in his relationship. There was a story of a man who became a millionaire by, you know, he won a lottery or something, and it's in US, you know, multi-millionaire he became. And at the end, what happened was, he was saying there was not even a single day when somebody didn't come to him asking for some money or some charity. He said his life became miserable practically, because people are just coming and they all expect him to donate something. And he had trouble with his family, with his wife, because the whole thing became, previously it was a stable family with wife and kids and so on. But when the whole amount of material opulence came in between, the relationship broke down. Because the illusory energy has its potency. The money has its weightage. It has its strength and its effect. It's not that if we have got a lot of money, you know, it doesn't have any strength. Okay, we have our money, we can have a nice financial plan, we can spend it accordingly and we will enjoy. It doesn't happen like that. It has its strength, and with its strength, it creates illusory energy. The illusory energy basically binds us. So, in this case, he had a lot of trouble with his family, with a lot of trouble with his relations. And security is another issue. And he had trouble with his kids. Ultimately, he committed suicide. And finally, the final statement he made was, it was a better time when I didn't want this much amount of money. I had a better life. But only because I got this so much of amount of money, the whole of my life changed. Everything changed. I expected I will have a good time, but everything reversed. So this is the potency of money. And the last week I was reading in the newspaper about an Indian gentleman who went to US and who was settled down there. He's a very brilliant fellow. He's an IITian. IIT means it's the top institute in India for technology, Indian Institute of Technology. It's hard because India, the population is very high and the competition to get in is fierce. So he's a graduate from IIT, and after that he did his master's from UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. It's a prestigious institution. He did his studies in his business, and he got nice education, intelligent. He got a nice job. I think his first job was PricewaterhouseCoopers. Yeah, it's a leading consultant company. So he got his big, you know, the big job, the big money, everything. Later, what happened? He's a businessman. He's quite business minded. He went on studying the stocks and stuff like that. And he actually entered into the stock market. Along with work, you know, he was playing a big role in the stock market. He invested quite a lot of money in it. Like he already had a lot of income. Apart from that, he took a lot of loan and invested a lot of money in the stock market. And he made few millions of dollars, US dollars. So he was in his success. He was just going up in his career. He was going up financially. He had his house in a rich suburb in the US. He was staying with his wife. He had his kids. He had his in-laws. So beautiful family. Everything is nice. But eventually what happened? He had trouble in the stock market because stock, you know, it doesn't go up all the time. There is always a downtime also. So there was some problem with the stock, and basically he lost quite a lot of money. Then he had some trouble with his job. He was jobless for quite a few months. Heavy, you know, who had job, who was in top of his career, and suddenly no job. So no job means no respect, no status, no security. And on the other side, he lost all his money in the stock. And last week, he shot himself. And just before shooting himself, he shot all his family. So this is the when the money comes, you know, people are bewildered. And when it is gone, people are affected so much. This is exactly the opposite we are reading here. Here we can see a person who is a pure devotee, when the material miseries or material opulences come, they are not affected, they are not elated, nor they are despondent. They are okay, they are in tranquility, they don't have any problem with that, because they are on a higher level. So this is a horrible condition in the material world, because if things are not straight, things are not, you know, always going up. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, it is dukkha and ashashvatam. It's the two characteristics. It is temporary, And since it is temporary, it is full of misery. Because we expect something that's permanent, but it doesn't happen here. And Bhagavad Gita says, you know, it's a padam padam yet vipadam. It's a, you know, very classic statement that in each and every step there is a danger. And so the spiritual world is defined as padam padam yet vipadam natesham. So those who go to spiritual world, there is no vipadam, there is no question of vipadam. That is exactly opposite of falling down. There is no question of falling down. It is there. And if you see the life of great devotees, they are always in the material miseries in one sense. When they are in this material world, the material miseries are around them. But how they respond is completely different from a materialist. They will be living a normal life, they will be living a material life, a life in this material world. But how they respond to the threefold miseries, or when the objects, the senses in touch with the sense objects, as said here, the response is completely different. It's like the example of Pandavas. Pandavas, if you really see the life of Pandavas, it's not very pleasant in one sense. They were born in a royal family, aristocratic family, great kingdom. But when they were kids, their father was lost, passed away. Pandu passed away. So Mother Kunti, she became a widow. And who was under protection? Dhritarashtra was the king. And he is a spiritually blind man, materially as well as spiritually blind man. So, you know, if you see the parentage of Pandavas, it is not so great. Then they were in a terrible situation. And of course, Bhishma Pitamaha was there, who was helping him out, helping the Pandavas out. Then they had the wonderful cousin brothers. Pandavas, who was the cousin brothers? Kauravas. They were very wonderful. So that, you know, if there is some fight, they will try to kill them. So that is the kind of relationship Pandavas had with their cousin brothers. It's terrible. It's like, even, you know, Bhimasena was also very naughty. When Kauravas, the oldest Kaurava brothers, hundred of them, when they climbed on big trees, once they were climbing on a mango tree, and Bhima will go down and he will just shake the whole tree. So mangoes will fall down and his brothers will also fall down. So this actually basically made them, you know, angry, because Duryodhana was so envious of Bhima, because Bhima was so powerful, he could do anything, and Duryodhana became so envious and he wanted to do something, you know, take some counteraction, you know, put him down somehow or other. And Duryodhana was thinking, you know, what is the best way I can, you know, defeat him? So he found everyone has some weakness. So he was looking for the weakness of Bhima. And he understood Bhima is ready to eat anything and everything. That is his weakness. So, okay, Duryodhana, okay, strategically planned. Okay, I should do something so that I can take this weakness and I can finish him off. Duryodhana made arrangements for nice prasadam, nice sweets. But it was mixed with some poison. And he gave to Bhima. Bhima is happy to eat anything, so no problem. He ate fully, he stuffed himself completely with all this sweets. And of course, after that he was feeling a bit drowsy. Some problems happening. Suddenly he fainted. And all these Kauravas, they took him and threw him in the river. And he started sinking. But there were a lot of poisonous snakes inside that river. So when these snakes were there, they started biting Bhima. And inside already there is some poison, and the poison is coming from the snakes. So actually it got, you know, disinfected, because it was, you know, both counteracted. That was Bhima's luck. And when he went down, or he was protected really, and when he went down, he met with Varuna, I think, king of the water. And Varuna was very happy, actually, he was very happy to meet Bhima, and he said, okay, what do you want? He gave him a benediction that you will become even more powerful than 10,000 elephants. So when Bhima came out of water, instead he being, you know, completely vanquished, holding, you know, he being killed, he became very powerful. So Duryodhana became even more envious. So this is just, it's a fun, but if you look from the point of view of Mother Kunti or, you know, Pandavas, the cousin brothers who are trying to kill
It is really horrible. And whenever they got a chance, they tried to kill. Afterwards, they got a kingdom. Where they gave the land? It was a Indraprastha, which was a barren land. They didn't get any proper kingdom. And they, by the mercy of Krishna, they could manifest a nice kingdom. They were ruling over there. Then the gambling happened. And after the gambling, they had to go on exile. They had to go on for 14 years. And there was a lot of trouble. You know, Duryodhan strategically, you know, sent Durvasa Muni so that, you know, he'd be cursed, but nothing happened. So all this time, we can see even Pandavas are going through a lot of material tribulations. And finally, you know, the war, they had to face the whole war of Kurukshetra. They won the battlefield. But afterwards, we can see in the first canto itself, Arjun who was, you know, who was a great warrior, who could lift Gandiva and who could defeat all the enemies of in the battle of Kurukshetra, he couldn't do much when he was faced with the cowherd boys, when he was trying to protect the queens of Dwarka. He couldn't do much. So he was defeated in one sense. He was defeated actually. So if you see the life of Pandava, you can see there is always material tribulation. But at the same time, they were Krishna conscious. So the point is, the material miseries are there for everyone, but the suffering is optional. The suffering, if one wants to suffer or not, it depends on one's consciousness. The material miseries are there, and the suffering is dependent on one's consciousness. Actually, there is a very interesting statement, Narad Muni. Okay, the whole thing is going on, and Narad Muni meets with Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Yudhishthira, and there was in the Bhagavatam, gives the narration of past times of Prahlad Maharaj and Narasimhadev. And after description of this past time, this is a conversation between Yudhishthira Maharaj and Narada Muni. Narada Muni was describing the whole pastime of Narasimha Dev to Yudhishthira Maharaj. After this narration, actually Yudhishthira Maharaj, out of his humility, he became, you know, really, you know, he was so eager to meet with the Lord. He was thinking, oh, for Prahlad Maharaj, Narasimha Dev came. So I couldn't meet him. He was just in a mood of separation from the Lord. So to enliven, to encourage Yudhishthira Maharaj and other Pandavas, Narada Muni said, Narada Muni actually mentioned a nice verse. He said, Yuyam Triloke Badapuri Bhaga Lokam Punana Mudira Payanti Eshandhana Vasati Visaksha Gudham Param Brahma Manushya Lingam. Narada Muni said, you are in the material world. However, you are the most fortunate. So the material world means suffering for most of the people. But in terms of, for this Pandavas, for you, O Yudhishthira Maharaj and other Pandavas, you are the most fortunate. Because in your house, so many great sages are visiting, including Narada Muni. They are just visiting the palace of Yudhishthira Maharaj. And what are the qualifications of these great sages? They are Lokam Punanam. They have the potency to purify the whole world. And the sages of that caliber, they are just frequently visiting Yudhishthira Maharaj and other Pandavas. And what is the reason for that? The reason is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is staying in their palace, incognito, in the form of a human being. So Narada Muni says, okay, on one side, you are in the material world. Material world implies suffering, but on the other hand, you are the most fortunate. So we can see, the miseries are there in all these conditions, but how one responds to that misery, that is dependent on one's consciousness. That is actually described in this verse. Here, the senses are in touch with the sense objects. However, an Uttama Adhikari is not elated, nor is he despondent. He is above that. We can see the example of Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, if you see the final pastime of Srila Prabhupada in this video, we can see Prabhupada's body is completely weak. It's just, you know, the bone and, you know, there is no, practically not much flesh in his body. It's like, you know, the body is so weak. But he was not crying. His consciousness was completely fixed on Krishna. He was giving his commentary to Bhagavatam. When one devotee went near Prabhupada's bed and he practically started crying seeing Prabhupada's situation. Prabhupada said, don't think that it will not happen to you. Meaning, this kind of thing, it happens to everyone. Material tribulation is applicable to everyone. But how to deal with that depends on one's state of consciousness. There is a story of a lady with a nice nail. She was growing her nails very beautifully, polishing it, you know, varnishing it, painting it, and you know, it kept very nicely. And one day she happened to go to an airport. And in the airport, you know, there was a customs check and they said, okay, you open your suitcase. So she opened her suitcase up. And after that, the man, you know, just closed clamped like this, the suitcase. And her fingernail, you know, it was quite long. The edge, you know, went inside the suitcase and, you know, it got broken. Practically there is no pain, if you see. But she, you know, she started yelling and, you know, screaming, you know, what happened to my beautiful hair, you know, the nail, you know, I have grown so nicely and I have painted so nicely, you know, what is this? So, you know, if you see, there is nothing to be actually be worried about. It is, you know, no pain, but because of the lower consciousness, she has to worry. So everything is just dependent on the consciousness. And I was hearing a lecture about Dr. Durga Swami. You know, he was in his last stage and, you know, it's such a, you know, traumatic situation if you think about this, you know, cancer, you know, such a pain. The doctor said, it is so horrible, the pain he was, realistically speaking, the pain he was going through was so horrible. But Bhagavad Swami was saying, after chanting Hare Krishna, you know, he was chanting Hare Krishna and he was telling, it cannot really get much better than this. You have to hear Hare Krishna and you have to chanting and you are sitting and you can't get much better than this. The taste in his chanting. So, one side the material miseries are coming, but he is so happy. So we can see how the Uttama Adhikari, how one is beyond this kind of material tribulation. And how, you know, when the senses are in touch with sense objects, they are not affected. So this is a contradiction actually. It's a contradictory behavior of devotees and the materialistic people for the same condition. When the senses are with the sense objects, or, you know, when they are in the misery or in a material happiness, how they respond is completely different. It's exactly opposite. As in even the activities of devotees and the materialistic people are completely opposite. As Bhagavad Gita says, you know, the night of a devotee is a daytime for a non-devotee. So it's exactly opposite. And for a devotee who is in absorbed Krishna, for him, the whole material world is not a place of suffering. It's actually a place of bliss. It's actually a statement by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur. He mentions, you know, Vishyam Purna Sukhayate. For one who has got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, for him, this material world is not a place of suffering. It's a place of bliss. Because he perceives Krishna everywhere. I was thinking in the life of from Lilamrita, I was seeing, you know, how Sri Raghuva, how he had to go through all these kind of things. He's a, you know, he's an Uttama Adhikari, he's a topmost devotee. And you know, when he was in India before starting to America, how much suffering he had to go through. Not suffering, he had to, you know, occupy with so many things. He had, you know, when he was in Delhi, he was attacked by a bull. He was practically fainted. He had to do the printing, he had to distribute, he had to do the collection, he had to do everything with this battery ordered magazine. In that, that video of Surendra Kumar Jain, he mentions it, he makes this point. He asked Srila Prabhupada, why do you have to do all these things? Why can't you stop these activities? Prabhupada said, no, this is my mission. This is my life mission. That is the reply of Prabhupada. So he was, you know, he was completely above whatever he was going through. Just fit in the service of Krishna and his spiritual master.
And such a devotee, how, or a Uttamadhikari, how is he able to be above this kind of tribulations of this material world? Because he is seeing everything in connection with Krishna. As described here, it's Vishnur Maya Vidam Pashyan, that is, seeing the whole world as the energy of Lord Vishnu. So that is their consciousness. Their consciousness is that they will see everything in connection with Krishna. And instead of serving the illusory energy, they serve Krishna because they have some higher taste. And in this purport, there are three things that we mentioned how to achieve this kind of consciousness. Because here the description is given about a Uttamadhikari, a pure devotee. So there are three instructions given how to really achieve this kind of consciousness. First given is to perform real renunciation. There is renunciation which is real as well as there is renunciation which is unreal, which is not correct, which is not properly performed. And if you see, there are different causes for renunciation. As it is said, one cause for renunciation is death of somebody who is near and dear to one. That is one cause of renunciation. If somebody has passed away, if you go to the crematorium or the burning cart, after seeing the whole scene, the whole body is being burned, one gets a kind of detachment. He feels, what is the futility of the whole material existence, the futility of this body, the futility of this kind of relationship. This actually causes a kind of detachment. It causes a kind of renunciation. So he basically goes to the burning heart and he sees the whole thing, the terrible situation, the burning, the body, the foul smell is coming, the whole thing. So he feels, oh, I should renounce all these activities and I should do something else. But when he comes out, the consciousness changes a bit. And after the day passes, it changes further. And eventually he forgets completely. The same person who was just crying, beating the chest and everything, after some time he leads a normal life. Because that renunciation or that detachment cannot stay permanent. Because the cause is very frivolous. It's not the real cause for the renunciation. There is another kind of renunciation, as is described in the Kapila Muni, describes the life in the womb. There, the suffering in the womb of a mother, that also causes a renunciation, it causes a detachment. And that is the reason it is mentioned, a child in the womb starts praying to the Supreme Lord. That is, oh, if I come out, I don't want to serve Maya, I just want to serve you. But we see, when the child comes out, people sing, happy birthday, and he forgets everything. And he just starts to enjoy, he will become completely in the trap of Maya. So that is another cause of renunciation, but that doesn't last. Another reason is that in the union with opposite sex, that can also cause this kind of temporary renunciation, temporary detachment. But after that is also vanquished. Then next one is suffering of this material world. When one goes through the whole cycle of material suffering, then one sees, the whole world, it is quite terrible, No point living here, I should do some higher activities, there is no point. This is a horrible place, this is hopeless. But after some time, when the suffering from the suffering, he gets some money or he gets a nice position, he gets some material opulence, he forgets that. So all these causes of renunciation or causes of vairagya are temporary. It cannot really bring the real detachment within the heart. The real detachment it can bring is bhakti. By hearing the glories of the Supreme Lord, by engaging one's senses in service of the Lord, one can really bring the real detachment. That is, instead of Phalgu Vairagya, one can bring the Yuktam Vairagya, that is described in this verse. So, Bhagavan says in first canto, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayatyasya Vairagyam Jnanam Chayata Haitukam. That is, by engaging in the process of devotional service unto Lord Vasudeva, one actually develops knowledge and detachment. So due to bhakti, the knowledge and detachment manifest. It's not other way around. Just by developing jnana and just by detachment, one cannot develop bhakti.
Bhakti is not the product of detachment. Bhakti is not the product of jnana. As stated in Nectar of Devotion, bhakti can only be produced by bhakti. So to have bhakti, one should have some inclination, some small faith. And that also ultimately comes from the mercy of the devotees. So from devotees and the bhakti is generated. So ultimately from Krishna and through the devotees, little bit of bhakti is coming. And that is the faith, the basic faith. And from that, the whole bhakti creeper is growing. So here, the last part is mentioned, Vithi Swami Indriya Arthan. A devotee senses in contact with the sense objects means he uses that in service of Krishna. So this is the process given for the real renunciation is using the senses in the service of Krishna basically. Whatever occupation we have, whatever facilities we have, whatever abilities we have, whatever skills we have, use everything in service of Krishna. That is one qualification required to come to this platform. So this is the practice. As Rupa Goswami says, anasakti vishayam, that is, by using the senses without attachment in service of Krishna, one can actually develop with some variety, the real renunciation. And second point mentioned is also very important, that is, very, very interesting point, that is no criticism. One should not criticize devotees. It's a very, very elaborately described by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Because our tendency is we may avoid criticizing a sannyasi, a maharaj, or a big devotee when Sri Prabhu was disabled. We say, okay, we respect, we may not criticize. When it comes to a devotee on a normal level, we tend to disrespect, we tend to criticize, we tend to find fault. So here in Swarupa Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, one shouldn't criticize a Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari or Anuttama Adhikari. So anyone, doesn't matter who, any devotee in any level, one should not criticize. If it is, because the criticism it actually comes from mind, and it can mind, words and action. The critical mentality is first in the mind and it can come as word and finally it can come into manifest into action. So it has to be actually removed before thinking, feeling and willing. You know, when thinking and feeling comes, you know, that stage itself it has to be removed. Otherwise, it's a problem. It can come into words and then into action. So it becomes a serious offense. And it can hamper the whole process of devotional service. It can hamper the growth in devotional service. Unless, you know, one is in a position to find fault in others, one can, otherwise one shouldn't. One Srila Prabhupada, actually it's a very interesting story in which Srila Prabhupada was asked, how do you feel, it was after establishing so many temples, so many centers around the world, Prabhupada was asked by a devotee, why do you feel when you came here, there is an initial phase in US and other states? So the Prabhupada's reply was very interesting. He said, that time, I didn't have to find fault in anyone. But now I have got so many disciples, so I had to find fault in them and I had to correct it. Because that is the business of a spiritual master. The Prabhu was telling his duty. He had to find fault. But unless we are in that position or if we are not in a position to correct others, we shouldn't. But there are people, you know, who have to do that. Need not be spiritual master, but senior devotees. They had to find, okay, something wrong with us, they have to correct us. That is acceptable. But the critical mentality we develop, that can be detrimental to our own life. So the first point was the real renunciation, that is engaging our senses and position in service of Krishna. Second point is don't criticize the devotee because that is completely detrimental to our spiritual life. It is the first offense, you know, blaspheming the devotees, you know, who are glorifying or who are spreading the holy names of Krishna. And the third point much mentioned is serving a devotee, service of the devotees. As Prahlad Maharaj says, you know, there is, for a person who is materialistically minded, there is no other way than serving a devotee. It says, you know, Mahiyasam Pada Rajopishekam. That is, just by taking the dust of a lot of feet of a devotee and putting on all over his body, that is the only way one can purify who is materialistically minded. So service of the devotees, that is also the third point. These are the three conditions given for one to elevate to a higher consciousness. I think I'll stop here. Any comments or questions or corrections? Yes, ma'am? Not really, I don't have. One I have, Smashan Vairagya, that is a renunciation from the after death of someone. That I have read in Prabhupada's books. The other one I can't accept is the one that I can't. Another point I would like to mention in this connection, that is the three classifications given, that is the Kanishtha, Madhyama and Uttama. It is classified in three steps. One is according to their chanting, according to their realization, and according to their faith and conviction. So according to chanting in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is mentioned the for a Kanishtha, the chanting is full of nama aparad. So he is chanting is offensive. But for Madhyam, he tries to avoid the offenses. And he is in a process to avoid all the offenses and come to a platform of where he can do the not Shuddha, but nama bha stage, where it's clearing stage, where his reactions are basically removed and he is going to the platform of Shuddha. And for a Uttama, it is completely pure chanting. And for in terms of faith and conviction, an Uttama Adhikari is completely, he has completely faith, he has complete mastery of the scriptures, and he can defeat anyone and he can convince anyone. Whereas a Madhyam, even though he has strong faith and conviction, he may not be able to defeat in argument with everyone. And for us, a Kanishtha, he himself is not fully convinced, so he cannot help himself nor others. So this is described in Nectar Devotion. And Ishavanishad gives according to realization, that is here, as it is given here, that is for an Uttama, he sees everything in connection with Krishna. Whereas a Madhyam, he has to see who are on a higher level, higher in devotion, who are lower than him, and who are on the equal level. And he sees Krishna as a loving object, and he avoids those who blaspheme the devotees and who accept the innocent and who tries to give mercy to the innocent. And for Kanishtha, he thinks the whole thing is only the Lord is present in the temple and the rest of the world is no connection with the Lord, like that. So these are the three classifications given are going to see.
Why does the
Madhyama
offer
short
offenses?
Our offense, okay,
why?
Because from in the Madhyam state, he has full faith and conviction in the scriptures. So when we see, we have to gain knowledge, because that is the Sambandha Gyan, what we are trying to achieve. That is required because then we can chant offensively. So to come to the platform of pure chanting, one has to go through the phase of, one has to try to avoid offenses. So when one develops firm faith and conviction in the scriptures says, okay, we have to avoid all the offenses. Because without that, one cannot go up in the upper and the ladder, that is, one cannot go to the Shuddha Nama. He has his own realization. It's not that he doesn't have any realization. Everyone has their own, the levels of realizations are different, but they have their own realization because he can see a devotee on a higher level, he can see on a lower level, he can see on a equal level. So he has some realization. He doesn't mean he doesn't have any realization. He has some realization. Yeah, it's not just intellectual, he has that understanding. And in that he tries to avoid the offenses. And that itself is it's a big process. So he just goes through that process. Yes.
I have a question about senses. Like Krishna in Bhagavad Gita talks about living entities struggling with the senses, including the mind. But not all living entities in the material bodies have those five senses in the mind.
Yeah.
So is he only referring to higher species and humans, or
higher species?
Humans, because not all species will have five senses. or noisy.
Okay. Senses,
The verse of that in Bhagavad Gita.
You mean the manashastani indriyani prakrutistani kashyati? Yeah. The mind and the other senses.
Yeah.
Shastani indriyani.
Because it means it's just struggling with pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. That not all, the plant doesn't have the sense of sight or.
Oh, okay. You mean to say, if you take trees, they can't see,
Yeah.
I don't know. The senses are not completely evolved. You mean?
Yeah.
Because the different limitations, they are in the evolution. They are in a progression towards, ultimately they are in a progression towards the human form of life.
Mm.
Because that is the perfection in one sense, in the where all the features are developed and one can really go back home, back to Godhead. So when you say, the living entity is complete, you say, Isha Vinashtha says, for instance, the living entity is complete, Purna, just like the Supreme Lord. Because that we are actually referring to the human beings, for instance. Because in the human being, all the senses, the mind, everything is well developed and he can take the spiritual knowledge and then he can elevate himself to the spiritual world. So the other living entities, they are suffering anyway. There's no doubt. Because it is in the, which I'm saying, the as the smoke covered by the fire covered by the smoke, the embryo covered by the womb, and what is the third one?
Mirror
and the, so these examples are given. So it doesn't mean everyone is covered in by its own conditioning. And in a lower species, that covering is so thick, that's all. So suffering is common for everyone. So if you say manashastrani indriyani, it doesn't mean it's just the human being. What is it? It's suffering for everyone. But, and mind is there for, the lower species, they have mind. The animals, they have mind. They have eyes. they have legs. You may take some species, maybe, I don't know, eyes. So suffering is common for everyone. You can see this. And the lower species, the suffering is more, actually. The fear part is more, actually. They try to, the fear is more for the lower species. They try to defend all the time. Most of the time they will be defending. If you look any animal, most of the time you just go near, just looking here, there, and just trying to run. Then the defense mechanism is very strong. So the fear is more, it means the suffering is more in the lower species. So that verse actually you can refer to all the living beings. And because it is said, Prakrutistani means those who achieve, who are in the material world, all are suffering, basically. Yes. Our neck body is actually designed first, the subtle body, the whole, whatever experience we have, whatever whole desire, everything is imprinted in our subtle body. So actually the subtle body transforms, so if one has to get a dog birth, he will have a dog subtle body with the proper mind and the whole thing, whole mindset, all done. And then he gets the growth body that which can actually, actually match that subtle body. So that's an interesting feature. And also, if you see the description of the hellish planet, similar point is there. That is, actually the Yamaraj trains to, how to enjoy the hellish suffering, or how to be part of the hellish suffering. Yamaraj actually trains one to, get a lower birth. So Yamaraj has two duties. One is he actually punishes, and also he trains for a lower body. How to act, how to behave. Those things, Yamaraj is the proper training. These are the two different duties of Yamaraj. So that is in the subtle state completely. When it comes to the sufferings of the hellish planet, completely on a subtle level. So there, that training part is there, and then he is, suffering the whole, the whole varieties of hellish, hellish sufferings. So it is subtle. The first is, the point is, subtle is the first, everything starts from the subtle, then to the gross. So because the tests are the basis, we see, you know, even in the 15th chapter, you know, the whole tree of the upside down tree of banyan tree, Ashwatha, it is actually resting on the desire. Finding where it is resting, it's on the desire of the banyan tree. So, the, you know, we can see that there is. Hare Krishna.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.